So, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my friend and our American Farm Bureau President, Zippy Duval.
Well, good morning, and welcome to the Farm Bureau family, to the 100th anniversary and celebration of American Farm Bureau. Give ourselves a round of applause for accomplishing successes for 100 years. You know, I'm just so proud to be here with you. And I don't know of a better place to celebrate this. And we want to thank Ronnie and Vivian Anderson, the president here in Louisiana, the governor, the commissioner of agriculture. I want to thank them for their hospitality. Please give them a round of applause. If you noticed, I reference you as a Farm Bureau family because what we have built over the 100 years is a family that nobody can head off. Nobody. And I don't want to get started without introducing my family. Today, I have two daughters and a son here, and the rest of the extended family with them, two grandchildren, son-in-law, daughter-in-law, and they're important to me. And first, I want you to recognize them. Would you please stand up and let them everyone see my family here? Turn around. I'm going to get to you. But there's one special person in my family that's the love of my life. And all of you know that. And she has been the recipient of all of your prayers. And we thank you and felt every one of them. But behind every good man is a good woman. And God blessed me with a wonderful woman. Please welcome my wife, Bonnie. Now, we're going to have some special guests here this week. We got a great agenda set up for you. I know you're going to enjoy it, but we really have some special guests. And Senator Pat Roberts is here, and we're going to celebrate with him about our farm bill. We got Undersecretary McKinney here to talk about trade. We got the Secretary of Agriculture that's going to be here in the morning, my friend Sonny Perdue. And then as my two little grandchildren is sitting down here on the front row, they Facebooked me the other day, FaceTime me. I'll get it right here in a minute. FaceTime me. And when they came up on the screen, they said, "We're going to see Donald Trump." So are we excited about the president coming back for the second year? If you were here last year, he made a promise. And their motto is promises made, promises kept. And he's making good on this, and he'll be here tomorrow. And we're looking forward to having the president with us. So I know you're all excited. I'm excited, but I'm most excited about y'all being here. So you can't talk about 100 years without doing a little history lesson. And it's been fascinating for us to research the history. So, you know, in the beginning, why have a Farm Bureau? Why do we need American Farm Bureau? Well, during that time before 1919, really 1911, farmers were struggling. They were grasping, trying to find a way to make a living with transportation problems and trade problems because the rest of the world had tariffs on our products. They were struggling, trying to find an answer and do the things the right way. And through the Extension Service and all the farmers across America, they started uniting. And it started in Broome County, New York. Any New Yorkers here? In 1911. And then the momentum picked up, and it went all across the country. County Farm Bureaus were started everywhere across the country. And the first state Farm Bureau was Missouri, the Show Me State. Is any Missourians here? And then after that, we had state after state after state, and we got to 1919, and they they looked at what they were being accomplishing in their communities with their farm bureaus and what they were accomplishing in the state house and the farm bureaus, and they said, we got to do this on a national level. And they created what we know as American Farm Bureau because they needed one united voice. In 1919, they put an office in Washington, D.C., and elected the first president. But how did they do that? How did they create that one united voice? They did it by working through our grassroots organizations, our counties. That's you. See, we always talk about this organization working from the bottom up. It started from the bottom up. And it still exists that we will rule this organization from the bottom up. The most important people in Farm Bureau are our County Farm Bureau members and their boards of directors. They are the power and strength of this organization. They were back then and they are today. But how do we accomplish what we want to accomplish? We do it. What are we accomplishing by doing that? We accomplish by enhancing and strengthening lives in rural America and building strong, prosperous communities. If all that sounds familiar to you, that's our mission statement. That's our mission to do that. In 1919, when that first president was elected, it was James Howard. And James Howard said to the people, what's good for the farmer is good for America. And it was then, and it still is today. In the 1920s, we hired our first lobbyist. His name was Gray Silver. It sounds like some spy or something. Gray Silver was elected, and he became our first lobbyist. During the 20s, our county farm bureaus and our state farm bureaus were doing such a good job at advocacy back home. Those congressmen and senators from those rural areas where our farmers were doing all that work could not ignore that voice. So the American Farm Bureau, along with our state and the county partners, encourage those congressmen and senators from those areas to create what they knew as a farm block. That farm block of congressmen and senators became so strong that nothing in Congress could get by them. It took their vote to make sure that it could pass. During the 20s, all the farm legislation was kind of struggling and getting passed, and the farm block got behind it and started working. The President of the United States during the time was President Harding, and he wanted to recess Congress and for a period of time. The Farm Bloc, encouraged by American Farm Bureau because they had not passed our legislation, would not go into recess. So the President of the United States in the 20s called American Farm Bureau staff into the Oval Office and said, okay, boys, you got us where you want us. What do you want us to do? So they stayed in session, the farm bloc and the rest of Congress passed several pieces of legislation that was good for American agriculture. And from that period on, Farm Bureau was at the important seats and all the tables during all the history of this country since then and all the important things that we do. You know, when you're having an impact, people want to know what you're up to. And we were having an impact. Even to the point, and you're not going to believe this, even to the point they wiretapped the American Farm Bureau office. And Gray Silver, who was our lobbyist, they had a private detective following him around trying to see what we were up to. Power in that one united voice working together. Then into the 30s, after the fall of the stock market, the depression, the Dust Bowl, farmers were struggling again. Farm Bureau put together a farm relief program. And from that program that they put together, they took it to Congress, and Congress implemented the very first farm bill in 1933. And it was almost word for word that the Farm Bureau policy had. The president of American Farm Bureau, Edwin O'Neill, during that time, went to the Oval Office and witnessed the president of the United States, Mr. President Roosevelt, sign the first farm bill into law. Just like your president today, myself, and several of our state presidents going to the White House just a few weeks ago, right before Christmas, and witnessed President Donald Trump signing the 2018 Farm Bill. We were there then. We were there. We are there now. We still continue to do those important things. When we roll into the 50s after World War II, a lot of our young men were back home on the farm, and people had the horrors of what happened during World War II. The world has been ripped apart. There were so many people starving to death. And Farm Bureau had this idea, well, if we can help feed those people, we can move our commodities out and the prices will stay good. So they came up with this idea that ended up being Food for Peace. It came up through Farm Bureau policy. We encouraged it. It became national policy and still exists today. But after all those years, Food for Peace have saved millions of lives. Millions. And God knows how many wars it prevented by keeping people fed and calm. We carry that theme over to caring for people and taking care of them to looking inside to our country. And our young farmers and ranchers spearhead the Harvest for All program today. It's been going on for many years now. And you, the grassroots of this organization, the strength and power, have donated over 30 million pounds of food. Millions of dollars. And you have volunteered thousands of hours at food banks across America. You know, it's just something in our DNA. We just want to do what's right and feed people. Is that familiar? That's what our secretary says today. Just do what's right and feed people. We want to care for the people. In the 1980s, though, President Carter put a grain embargo on Russia. And it ruined our reputation of being the breadbasket of the world. It put a grip on the farmers and hurt our prices to the point that during the 80 election, when Ronald Reagan was running, he made a commitment that he would lift that grain embargo if elected. So after his election, he was elected. Grain embargo continued. There was a big push from Farm Bureau all across this country. And President Farm Bureau then, Bob Delano, heard that push and that desire to make this president be good on his election commitment. So he calls the White House and talks to Secretary Jim Brady and Chief of Staff James Baker. And Baker says, you need to talk to Brady. He's going to be with the president tomorrow morning. They're going to make a speech at the Washington Hilton. And you can get together with them on the phone after that and try to get them to lift that embargo. And James Baker says, I think we should do it. We made that commitment. We should do it. Well, unfortunately, that conversation never happened. Because that day when he left the Washington Hilton, Mr. Brady and Mr. Reagan, President Reagan, were shot. But once they were in the hospital recuperating, Chief of Staff James Baker brought it to the president's attention, and that embargo was lifted, which was one of the pieces that helped us try to survive the 80s, which was a very bad time for us. See, a lot of the issues that we faced over the 100 years still exist today. One of them really haunts me every day. It haunts me every day that the average age of the American farmer is my age or older. Same problem, 1919, when all them young men come back from World War I. There was a familiar song on the radio during that time. The name of the song was, How You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm? How You Gonna Keep Them Down on the Farm? They'd seen the lights of Paris, the lights of Broadway. They didn't know another world was out there outside their fence rows. How are we going to get them to come back to the farm? That exists today. The farms on America have approached or experienced a perfect storm this year. 2018 has been a terrible year for all of us between weather and fire, hurricanes, and yes, volcanoes. It's been a terrible year, too wet, too dry. Prices down, trade war, labor shortage, rising debt on our farms, 50% of our income gone. I had an opportunity to spend a little time with the Georgia milk producers. I'm not Georgia milk, the national milk producers back in Phoenix back in October. I made a speech similar to this one. And after the speech was over with, several farmer dairymen came up to the stage and wanted to speak to me. But one of them came up on the steps of the stage, and I looked him in the eye, and I could tell this was not going to be a pleasant conversation. See, this man's lip was quivering, his cheeks were red. I could see his eyes tearing up. He had something he wanted to tell me, and he got to me and took my hand. He could not get it out of his mouth. And I pulled his shoulder to mine and I said, "Brother, I'll stand here and hold your hand until you can tell me what you need to tell me." And after about 2 minutes of struggling his emotions back, he says, "My son is fifth generation on our dairy farm, and we just had to put it up for sale last week. Farmers are doing some bad things to themselves all across the country because they don't see a way out. And we got to pay attention to what's happening to our neighbors and try to help the mental issues that are around this tragic storm that we're going through. But I tell you, as bad as 2018 was on the farm, 2018 will go down in American Farm Bureau history as one of the most productive agricultural policy years in our history." Thank you. With this administration giving us a seat at the table, we nurtured them with them through tax reform, which lowered the tax rate for almost every farmer. One of the key things that we've been focused on all my Farm Bureau life is let's get rid of the inheritance tax. It's a shame that a man work all his life and pay for a farm and his family have to sell it to pay the inheritance tax. Well, we didn't get totally rid of it, but we doubled the exemption in this tax reform. In 2018, we restructured the way we handled the Farm Bill discussion within our organization. See, I thought it was important for us to evaluate what we've been doing over the years because one of our biggest issues, the biggest problem, is keeping that one voice together between commodity groups, between regions. We're all different. How do you make one voice out of that? I said, we got to build one team. So we took Andrew Wansley, he works for us, and I made him the point person. And all the people up and down the halls of American Farm Bureau that work in Pacific areas that dealt in the Farm Bill, made them part of that team. And then I said, and what we did then, we did put the most important piece that we could put into this on this team. We turned back to our states and says, we need all your national affairs directors sitting on this Farm Bill team. We had weekly phone calls. We made recommendations to the board. The board made recommendations to Congress. And just about everything that was in those recommendations came out in this Farm Bill. The process was transparent. It was motivating. It let Texas know what New York needed, and New York know what California needed, and it let Georgia and Illinois know what they needed. And it made us understand how this affects all of us, and it created one united voice. So what's in that Farm Bill? It improves our risk management tools. It protects our crop insurance, which is the cornerstone of our Farm Bill. It funded trade development, which we crucially need right now. It makes investments in research and development and in beginning farmers. Increase the funding there. It definitely is a complete package, and we're so proud that we've had the opportunity to be the partners of the four principals, who is Senator Pat Roberts, Senator Debbie Stabenow, Congressman Mike Conaway, and Congressman Colin Peterson. And we need to give them a round of applause. And I applaud them because it's very few times that we introduce a Farm Bill and get it voted on in the same year and passed. And very few times did they pass a Farm Bill with this strong of a bipartisan vote. These four people worked side by side. We worked side by side with them to make sure we done what was right for farmers and brought 5 years of certainty to us. But what about, what other things did we face during 18? Trade. It's been all over the board. It's been in the discussions all year long. We dealt with Korea trade agreement, renegotiated it. Our message was do no harm. They did no harm. They renegotiated NAFTA. Our message was do no harm. They did better and created USMCA. But it's our time now. We got to get it through Congress. This president can't do it by himself. This secretary can't do it by himself. And surely those four principals can't do it by themselves. We got to make sure when everybody's back home in your communities, you're telling them we need this trade treaty passed. They went on offense. We were encouraging them back in April and May to go on offense. If China was going to take so long and we was going to have to renegotiate NAFTA, go on offense and go after Japan. Let's have a bilateral there. European Union, the KU. They're doing that as we speak. We encouraged them to do that. The trade war in China is going to be a long one. And we keep delivering the message. We're with you, Mr. President. We understand it. But we need to make sure the rest of the world is helping you, because China's not just mistreating us. They're mistreating the whole world. And we need partners to do that. But the runway of our patience is going to be determined about the financial situations of our farms. And we went into this battle very weak. So we're going to hang with him. We encouraged him to get a fast solution to it. But to help us, they delivered a mitigation package that no way makes us whole for what this has cost us. But it surely is appreciated. And let's show them our appreciation for bringing that mitigation package and their goodwill to American farmers. Now, you can't talk about trade without talking about another little historical thing. See, when I was just on, when I was on the Board of Directors of American Farm Bureau, I was asked to serve on the Trade Advisory Committee. And for, and I was asked by President Bob Stallman. And he took us around China, Korea, and I witnessed a man in his element. He had the ideals around trade and issues around trade. He had it mastered. I was so proud to be traveling with Bob Stallman across the world talking about American agriculture. This man has given and donated to this organization and worked for American farmers for almost 20 years. And he's with us tonight with his family. And I'd love for us to give him a great Farm Bureau shout out for his great dedication. Bob Stallman. Bob, thank you so much for what you did in the past. Thank you for mentoring me to be coming this place. We'll never be able to repay you for the efforts that you put into your job all those years. We've also been working on regulatory reform. 28 deregulation actions taken by this administration, and almost half of them had to do with agriculture. And there's 50 more in the works, so we're excited about what's coming. Electronic logging devices where we're hauling cattle, bees, and fish. We make sure that we got an exemption from that, and we're working on a permanent exemption because I know what it means to us cattle farmers. We're also working on, we've been working in educating this administration through the Secretary's office and this administration about a year-round sale of E15. And we've convinced them that we need a new rule on that. So that's coming this spring. We'll be working on that. And then, of course, WOTUS. WOTUS was a big one. 5 years battle that we had fighting the Waters of the U.S. ruling that the previous administration put out. 5 years of Ditch the Rule campaign spread across this country. You had signs in your front yard about Ditch the Rule. You went to local meetings telling your community about it. It was the largest federal land grab of our farms and our lands and taking our private property rights in the history of our country. And this organization showed his strength by making a move to try to do away with that rule and get a new one. Early this year, this last year, Mr. Pruitt, the EPA administrator at that time, called me and asked me to go to lunch with him. He wanted to talk about those three issues. He wanted to talk about WOTUS. He wanted to talk about EPCRA, where they wanted to put the emissions from our cows into the Superfund, which we was able to get rid of. And he wanted to talk about E15. We talked about all three of them at dinner that day, but the big most time we spent was on WOTUS. And he asked me, he said, so what's a new rule look like to you? I said, it needs to be one or two pages. It needs to have clear definitions. And a farmer needs to be able to take it and put it in his truck right across his farm and say, yes, I know that's waters of the U.S. And no, that's not. That puddle's not. Instead of us having to hire contract people, yes. Instead of us having to hire lawyers and people tell us where they're at. And then government play gotcha with it. Well, EPA Director Mr. Wheeler now is out traveling. I traveled with him and the Secretary down to Tennessee. And when he described this new rule, you know what he said? He said, this new rule is short, clear definitions. And you can put it in your pickup truck and ride across your farm and determine what's waters of the U.S. Now, you tell me, that wasn't Zippy Duval talking. That was American Farm Bureau's influence. That's American Farm Bureau's influence. So this rule's coming. So we had a ditch rule campaign. We got a new campaign. New campaign is clean water, clear rules, because the comment period is being opened up. Now, that comment period is not just for us that believe in this new rule. It's for everybody to comment. And let me tell you something. The environmentalists hate this new rule. They like the old one. They like to be able to gotcha with us. They want us to have to answer to other people. They're going to come out in force and try to defeat this new rule to get it withdrawn. You know, if I look back over history, I've never seen this organization walk away from a fight. Never. I've never seen Bob Stallman turn away from a fight. And his predecessors. By golly, we're not going to do it this time. We're going to make sure that everybody's involved in this campaign of clean water, clear rules. And we're going to make sure that every farmer that hears the message about this sends a message in. Now, we're going to help you in a trade show. You go by, we'll let you sign a card. But let me encourage you. You sign that card just signing up to say, I'm going to do this. We're going to send it in for you. But they get a card that look just alike, this tall. You know what it means? It means one comment. So you sign that card. Sign up to make that pledge to answer the call. But I want you to go back home and get on your computer, go to our website. We'll make it easy for you, but we need for you to change the words and say what you need to say. If you see a definition in there that's not clear, tell them. If you see something you like, tell them. Let's not lose this battle in the last, this war in the last battle. It's up to us. We got to get this done, and we can do that. So look at 2018, and I haven't even really scratched the surface. Tax reform, trade, farm bill, regulatory reform, a lot of accomplishment. It is going to go down in history as a great year as far as farm policy. But you know what? You know who made it happen? It was you. It was the emails, the phone calls. It was the trips to Washington. It was going to a town hall meeting and seeing great people like Pat Roberts and telling them about what this rule, old rule, did to you. You're responsible for these wins. You are the power and strength of this organization. But we do have a little group that we've trained and highlighted their communication skills. They are on the front lines for us communicating this issue and all the issues. They are heavily involved in social media. They're going to local meetings talking about these issues. They're writing articles. And we call them the grassroots outreach team or the GO team. And we got a little over 200 members of that GO team now that your states have allowed us, American Farm Bureau, to use. And we got some of them here with us tonight. And if you see them in the hall, they got purple scarves on or purple ties. If you see them in the trade show, please stop and shake your hand and thank them for their extra effort they put into our advocacy route. So I would like to ask them to stand up so we can recognize them. the grassroots outreach team, the GO team. So what about 2019? Got a new Congress coming to town. It's our challenge, our opportunity to go to all those new congressmen and senators, introduce ourselves, introduce Farm Bureau to them, tell them we want to be an asset to them. We want to be a reference for them. We want to be able to help them pass sound policy that's going to move our rural communities forward and help farmers and ranchers. We want to build trust so that they'll feel like calling American Farm Bureau and calling our state farm bureaus. We're going to work on farm labor. With all this discussion about a wall and all this discussion about immigration reform, we're going to try to seize the moment. And if anything moves and we get a positive pathway, we got to solve the biggest problem that faces American farmers, and that's farm labor. We're going to continue our regulatory reform. We're going to talk about trade more and make sure that we stay on target with there. And we're going to talk about infrastructure. Broadband. How many of y'all have talked to me about broadband? You know, broadband's not a luxury anymore. It's a necessity. The technologies you use today won't work in places in our country without broadband. And we got to solve that problem. And we got to continue our ag research so that we can stay on the cutting edge. That's what we're going to be doing in 19. And our plate is loaded, and we're ready to accomplish some things. You know, history has defined us as an organization and a country. It's defined us not just as the voice of the American farmer, but the Farm Bureau family. In our Farm Bureau family, there's some Farm Bureau heroes that I'd like to talk about. You know, back during World War II, a lot of our young men and women left and went and served our country in World War II. Thousands of them. But there's one I wanted to highlight tonight. His name was Garland Merle Connor from Kentucky. He was a farm boy from Kentucky, Farm Bureau member. And after his death, he went on to live with the Lord. His wife tried to start the process to get what Mr. Connor really deserved for his act of bravery. I'd like for you to turn your attention to the screen for just a minute or two and see this story.
Today we pay tribute to this Kentucky farm boy who stared down evil with the strength of a warrior and the heart of a true hero. First Lieutenant Garland Merle Connor. Although he died 20 years ago today, he takes his rightful place in the eternal chronicle of American valor.
He'd been in the hospital for quite some time, and he didn't like being in there. He was in a wheelchair, and they told him he might not ever walk anymore. But he got into a truck with some of his fellow soldiers and went back to the front lines. General Ramsey was asking for volunteers to go out and try to find where the Germans were bunked out at. And Merle found them, and he rolled a spool of wire, telephone wire, as he ran across the field. And he fell down into a shallow ditch and laid there for I can't remember how many hours, but directing artillery from the where the Germans were.
In front of the lone American soldier were six German tanks and hundreds of German soldiers. As bullets flew all around him, Lieutenant Connor directed artillery fire, each time successfully decimating the enemy.
Even when they got so close to him, most people would have quit, but he directed the artillery over himself.
When they were nearly on top of Lieutenant Connor, he ordered fire on his own position, exactly where he was, courageously choosing to face death in order to save his battalion and achieve victory for freedom. And those people that were with him, many of them now gone, said it was the single bravest act they've ever seen.
President of the United States of America, authorized by Act of Congress, March 3, 1863, has awarded in the name of Congress the Medal of Honor to First Lieutenant Garland M. Connor, United States Army.
We did it, Merle. We finally got what you deserved. And as I've said in the past, and I continue to say, God bless the United States of America, and God bless all the veterans. And that's what Merle would want me to say. Because he really enjoyed working with the veterans, and he enjoyed his farm life. He enjoyed doing the farm work. He enjoyed being with other people, and he enjoyed Farm Bureau.
Ms. Connor was supposed to be with us today, and she was unable to travel. So I hope that she's at home watching this live on RFD TV or somebody streaming it for her. But her husband was the example of thousands of young men and women that left their farms. So let's really hand our heart out to Ms. Connor and show her our appreciation for their sacrifice. I'm going to mention one other event in history, and all of us remember where we were on September 11th. On September 11th, I was walking out of my parlor, my dairy parlor, where I was milking cows, walking toward my milk room, and Bonnie stepped out the back door. And I was standing right by the vacuum pump, so I couldn't really hear what she was saying, but she said it loud enough I could hear it. She said, "They have attacked us. They have attacked us." And I said, "Attacked who?" And I go into the house, and we were just couldn't believe what we saw. Those planes fall, running into the Twin Towers. The beginning of a war that still exists today against terrorism. Well, that day, John Ognanowski was piloting a plane. John was a farmer and a Farm Bureau member from Massachusetts. He was one of the first casualties of that war. See, the American Farm Bureau family always answers the call. Many of our young men and women, our kids, have gone into that war. Still fighting terrorism today. My son was one of them. Flew 119 combat missions in his Black Hawk. He's home now, safe, with three of my beautiful grandchildren that couldn't be with us today. Thousands of young men and women have come home wounded, scarred for life, fighting for our freedom. Our freedom that we enjoy to worship our God like we want to and to farm our farms like we want to. Some of them never come home at all. We have to honor these young men and women. We have to honor them by making sure that we never allow our country to depend on a foreign, dangerous land to supply us with not just our energy, but our food. And I'm telling you, men and women of the Farm Bureau, my farmer partners across this country, that one's on us. See, nobody else is going to generate that food for our country but us. And now we're contributing a big portion of the energy that we use. That one is on us. So I'm so grateful to this great organization that we know as Farm Bureau and the Farm Bureau family. Our founding fathers and mothers of our nation and this organization were guided by a divine hand. If I could sit down and talk to those founding fathers and mothers, I'd tell them about how even today, centuries later, it's obvious that they were guided by a divine hand. Because there's no explanations why we've lasted this lasting freedom that we have and the ability for us to accomplish the things that we have accomplished in American Farm Bureau. See, there's proof that our founding farmers sought God's guidance. Because it's inscribed, their faith is inscribed in their writings. And when I'm in Washington and if I happen to have an afternoon to walk around, and I walk around the mall to those monuments, God is mentioned in all of them. John Adams wrote in our Constitution was made for a moral and religious people. We are so blessed to live in a nation under God with liberty and justice for all. But you know, I know it's been a hard year, but we still got to have hope. We're in a cycle. That hope resides in an administration that lets us at the table, a Congress that welcomes our advice, a dream team that this president's put in USDA, and our hope that we find in the Bible. Jeremiah 29:11 says, the Lord says, I know the plan I have for you. The plans to prosper you, not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. That's God's words. See, when we needed a country of freedom, God answered the call. He provided leaders that realized that He was going to give them the strength to do this. When we face tragedies in our country, He always provides us the strength to get through that. He even, when people called out for a Savior, He sent His own Son. We got a God that answers the call. When we needed an American Farm Bureau, or one united voice, He provided leadership to make this organization what it is. He answered the call. He's calling us today. We're being called today to step in, break through to a new century of American Farm Bureau. Are you going to answer that call? I've never been disappointed by the people that's in this room. We always answer the call, whether it's for farmers and ranchers in policy or whether it's for our freedom in our country. Farm Bureau family always answers the call. I want to thank you for the privilege to serve you. Bonnie and I love all of you. You are our family. It is an honor to be here as president of American Farm Bureau while we're celebrating our 100th anniversary. And we hope that God blesses you in 2019, and I know that you will answer the call as we break through to a new century of American Farm Bureau. Thank you. God bless the American farmer, and God bless the United States of America.